Welcome to a special edition of College Crosscast. I'm Ryan McDonald.
I'm Marissa Njemi.
Hey everyone, it's Chris Dostremski.
Hey folks, how you doing? It's Erie Barrister.
And we got a special guest tonight.
Hey guys, Dylan Sheridan, head coach, Cleveland State.
And we are ready to rock and roll and get you all set again for the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, as well as having some fun with Coach Sheridan again and talking a little bit about his Cleveland State program and his thoughts on this year's tournament on this edition of College Crosscast, the official 50th one, if you will. And welcome to College Crosscast. Hope everybody's doing well this evening as we march forward to the NCAA tournament. We have a playing game going on as we speak between Bryan and Monmouth. And soon enough, it will be the most fun weekend of lacrosse of the season, wall-to-wall across Saturday and Sunday. We're happy to have Marissa on board. We knew we wanted to have her on for the Selection Sunday show because she would have been much better than Chris, who was on for 15 minutes.
That was the best 15 minutes ever, though. That was
good. That was true.
No one invited me for Sunday.
I wasn't in charge of that, so I'm sorry.
In retrospect, Chris, like, wasn't in charge of that, too.
Well, either way, we regret making that decision. Wish you were on board, too. But we're making some amends by having you on tonight.
More importantly, we're so happy to have you, Coach Sheridan. Thanks again for sparing some time. I know you've been all over the place this last few days.
Yeah, appreciate it. I look forward to, you know, catching up with you guys and talking some shop here.
Alrighty, so just to set the mood, Coach Sheridan joined us at the beginning of the season to preview his Cleveland State Vikings in their inaugural season. And their inaugural season is all wrapped up. They went 5-9 this season, including an end-of-season victory to get their first D1 victory over Detroit Mercy to wrap up the season. So a pretty successful first year for the Vikings as they continue their transition to the D1 level. And here we will have Coach Sheridan with us to talk about that season of ups, downs, and everything about laying the foundation of the program. So we're really psyched to have him on board once again to get a little post-mortem on the inaugural season of Cleveland State Viking lacrosse.
Coach, just I was wondering before we get into individual questions, just your initial thoughts on your first year, and in particular memories you had before we ask you anything specific.
Yeah, no, I think initial thoughts, you know, in retrospect, really thrilled by the way the guys kind of handled adversity, met the challenge of transitioning from high school lacrosse to Division I lacrosse, especially considering the strength of schedule that they faced and the demands that we placed on them. You know, it certainly isn't easy, I don't think, for any kid making the transition from high school to college lacrosse at really any college collegiate level. But to do it in this setting, new school, new group of teammates, nobody having done it before, and then to have to play the week in, week out, you know, top teams in the country, I really couldn't be more impressed and more pleased with the way the kids handled it, how they grew, how they matured, certainly how I think, a great group of assistant coaches got them ready every single week. And just really pleased to see that the guys, they stayed with it, all the way to the end, and, and thankful for the opportunity to get a really, quality win there at the end of the season to kind of help reward the kids for their effort and hard work. And, really just initially just grateful for everybody's commitment to it and kind of resolve, and really very excited about the future.
Coach, we talked about, you just talked about recently with the improvement of the freshmen, mainly the freshmen, but as a coach, in your eyes, what were some of your turning points that you saw, or some of the more monumental moments from the season that led to probably the biggest one of them all, which was defeating Detroit Mercy the last game of the regular season?
Yeah, there were a couple kind of watershed moments for us. I think, starting with the scrimmage against Bellarmine in the fall, I think it opened the eyes of a lot of folks, not just internally, but I think externally, you know, from within the university that, well, okay, the team's actually here. They're actually real people filling out uniforms, and this thing is actually going to happen. It's not just an idea anymore. And then internally, I think the guys got a lot of confidence out of that scrimmage. We were able to put up some goals. We kind of were a thorn in Bellarmine's side throughout the day. I think that from a growth standpoint, after that scrimmage, for the next, 2 weeks, the remaining 2 weeks that we had with the guys before, Thanksgiving and all that good stuff, we saw a massive growth spurt. And I think it was because they really got to see how they measured up against Division I, talent and knew now, okay, wow, it just a whole nother level there that we can get to and that we're capable of. So that was, I think, a big moment for us. Certainly the Michigan game, not only the excitement of it, and I thought, the crowd, the atmosphere, and the buildup, but actual play on the field, I thought our guys did a really, really good job of executing our game plan. And we wish we could have a couple goals back. I thought I didn't really necessarily have them as prepared as I probably should have for Michigan's transition game, but I thought in the half field, our kids displayed a poise and an understanding of what we were trying to do at a level that was kind of beyond their years, and that was exciting and kind of got us motivated for the next step. And then, the next real jump for us, I thought, was the Penn State game. actually, I should say leading up, the week leading up to the Penn State game, we were kind of forced into some unusual circumstances due to the winter storm Stella that went through the East Coast and had to cancel a couple games with Hofstra and Fairfield, which was disappointing. And then we had to come back to Cleveland and kind of regroup and figure out what we were going to do from a practice standpoint, because that time was allotted to take the dome down that we have over our field. So we couldn't practice on our field. So we actually moved into a local indoor facility, the Four Sports, out on the west side, and it's a lot smaller than a normal field. And I thought that week of practice, we did a couple two-a-days, really took our team to a different level. The level of competition, the intensity, and I think it's because of the confined space, kind of just took it up a notch. And that week leading into Penn State was just really productive for us. I actually left a couple young men home that weekend because of academic reasons. And I thought that was eye-opening to the guys that actually went on the trip that, this is the real thing and we're going to be held accountable on every aspect of how we perform. And the guys that went, went out to Happy Valley or State College and played the number one team to a really, really good game. And I thought probably most – until the Detroit game, our most complete game of the year. So that was certainly, a confidence builder. And I thought we saw a breakout game from a couple of our guys. And that, carried over for the rest of the season. And hopefully we'll continue to carry over into next season. So that was a big one. And then, the Detroit game, obviously, leading into the last one. Just the way our guys kind of came back to practice after a loss against Sacred Heart that we didn't really play very well. Knowing that it was it was the last time we'd be together, and it was kind of the last ride for this inaugural season, and they came ready to practice hard and executed a game plan really to the best of our capability and managed to get a win.
Coach, if I can just jump in with a question. Having a team that is primarily freshmen, or at least a young team, but when you have so many first-year players on the roster, how do you really, you mentioned building up accountability and things like that, but how do you build up a leadership base, since this is going to be your base of players that, these are the only players on the inaugural team, but they're going to be your base of players for years to come?
Right, and honestly, that's a really good question, because that was a struggle for us throughout the early to middle parts of the season. We just didn't have anybody really step forward in that role. And that's not to say that guys weren't leading. I think they were sharing the responsibility in a really good way. But sometimes you just need a voice and you need somebody to step up. And we were lacking that, not only on the field during game days, but really on the practice field. you know, there's only so much yelling and screaming I can do, right, and our assistant coaches can do. At some point, the onus is on the players, and that's where we kind of lacked that leadership this year. I did think that throughout the course of the year, some leaders, you know, took a step forward, and really the kids, the ownership transferred from us to the kids probably around spring break. That Penn State week, we played Wittenberg and then into Penn State. They really kind of took more of an active role in terms of leading the team, and I thought it was a big transition for us. And really, it's tough. It's difficult what we asked them to do. I mean, they're all in the same class. So for them to get on each other, and they're all going through at the same time, investing the same amount of energy and commitment. And so it's hard for them to say, hey, look, you're not going as hard as I am, or we need you to do this. But next year and the years moving forward, these guys will be able to say, look, we went through it. We know what you're going through. We need you to give more, or you're doing a great job, and I know it's hard, but you're going to be okay. We didn't have any of that this year. And so, yeah, we struggled through it, but I think, the ultimately we're going to be so much stronger for it next year and the years moving forward.
In addition to, you know, I know you were just talking about some of the games that stuck out to you throughout the schedule, but your program made a lot of trips to some of the top teams in college across. Were there any road trips, in addition to the Penn State one you talked about a little bit earlier, that really stuck out, or the ones that you're really going to remember, you know, stepping out and playing on a big team's field?
Yeah, no, we had our exit interviews last week with all the individual players, and one of the things I asked about, to every kid is, what did you love about playing Cleveland State lacrosse? And almost to a man, outside of the bonds and the relationships and the time spent together, they love the competition. They loved who we played. They loved the schedule. They loved the opportunity to compete at the highest level. So that was really exciting for me, because that's kind of how I want to continue to operate here. I thought the Duke trip right off the bat was pretty exciting, and just really exposed the guys to a whole new world of what this thing can look like and should look like. Physically, that game took its toll on us, but I thought the guys really enjoyed the trip together, being together, and took some confidence out of the fact that we were able to hang for a little while there in that game before it kind of just, before Duke was Duke. But it was a good trip for us. You know, the other trip that I thought was really exciting for us in some ways was, the Denver trip. You know, you get two games out of it. We have some Colorado kids, and certainly we have some West Coast kids, and I thought that was a lot of fun. And we, we had some success there early against Denver as well. They're the number one team in the country at the time, and it was a sold-out crowd and all that good stuff. The Virginia trip I thought was memorable, really due to the adversity and how our guys are going to have to learn from that experience. The travel did not go well, and we played a really, really fast Virginia team, and we played them tired, and it showed. And we have to learn from that. Nobody cares, if you got in late or you didn't get enough sleep or whatever. So guys, we'll grow from that, and as a program, we'll get better. I also had a baby boy that night during the game. So that was certainly memorable, and kind of kept me from getting too down on the fact that we got clobbered. The trip to Sacred Heart was good because we saw a senior day. That was our kids' first exposure to what a senior day looks like, and it's really tough for them to imagine what it's going to be like, and that clock is ticking, and the urgency that, the Sacred Heart seniors felt. But it was good for our kids to see it and experience it, because there is an expiration date on college lacrosse for every player, and so I thought that was really meaningful for us as well.
By the way, before we go to save for the next question, I want to congratulate your wife on becoming the first women's lacrosse head coach at Kent State. I know it's a pretty big moment for her and for you as well, becoming the first head coach at Cleveland State. So just wanted to throw that out there too, since we were talking about Bill Tierney.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, mm-hmm. She's very excited. As a family, we couldn't be more excited. Kent State is a wonderful place, to be a student, and certainly we think it's going to be a wonderful place to be a student athlete. And I think she's a terrific coach. So I'm glad that she's got an opportunity there.
Yeah, definitely, Coach. Congratulations. I know coaches try not to talk about themselves, but I have to ask, like, transitioning from assistant to now being a head coach, could you just describe some of the things that surprised you the most as, you know, being the boss? And could you also talk about your assistants, Andy German and Kyle Bernlauer, and your volunteer assistant, Garrison Chan? How was their first year under you, but you know, how you saw them grow, or some of the things that surprised you the most, you know, being the guy in charge of his own program?
Sure. Yeah. No. I think in some ways I'm a very lucky first-time head coach, and I say that half jokingly. There's nobody there for Cleveland State athletics to compare me to, so I lucked out in that department. But no, it's been a ton of fun. Certainly, I understand and appreciate, probably even now to a greater extent, the trust that a parent puts in a coach. You know, as an assistant, you don't think about that stuff. You just focus on the X's and O's and the winning. But as a head coach, you know, you really start to realize that, you know, parents trust you not only to help their kids get better at lacrosse, but to make sure that they're, you know, happy, healthy, and making progress toward a degree, and it's a really important deal. So, you know, that's an added responsibility, but one that I cherish and I'm grateful for. I think the other thing that I take away from this year is that, you know, and it's a kind of a cliche quote, but really, you know, if I have a bad day, or if I don't bring the energy one day, well, guess what? The program's going to reflect that. So you almost have to have limitless energy and be as kind of driven as you can possibly be every single day, because at this stage of our development, our program just needs it. And I like that. You know, that's why I took the job. I really enjoy it. But I'm also, again, very fortunate to have an incredible staff of assistant coaches. You know, Andy German, you know, great experience, certainly coaching. It's funny, we go back a long, long ways. You know, we coached against each other at the D3 level, then at the Division I level, and then I was fortunate enough to bring him on staff with the team Thailand at the World Championships in 2014. You know, I couldn't have asked for a better guy to come on board and help build this thing together. I mean, he really is kind of a co-head coach for me, and, you know, he can coach either side of the ball. This year he coached the defense, but, you know, he just brings a wealth of experience. He's kind of the yin to the yang here. He's got a lighthearted personality and, you know, easy to talk to. And he's just been, you know, incredible helping this thing get off the ground. And, you know, Kyle is Kyle. You know, he's very detail-oriented. You know, there's no secret to his success. I'm sure that he approached the game as a player much like he approaches it as a coach. He's dialed in. And watching him grow from kind of transitioning from college player to now – I think a very, very strong, you know, young college coach has been a pleasure, and it's my hope, you know, that he goes on to great things, and certainly I selfishly want to keep him with us for as long as we can, but if he wants to continue coaching, he's got an extremely bright future, just a very knowledgeable, you know, young man, and communicates extremely well, and the kids have, you know, a respect for him because he's so close to the game, having played just you know, last year, that is really important to us as well. And then Gary, lastly, Gary is just, you know, what can you say? If you've ever met the guy, you would love him. He's kind of like a real life Vince Vaughn character. You know, he's just got such a bubbly personality. He's hilarious. He keeps everything in perspective, and he cares so much, and it's just, he wears it on his sleeve. So really, really thankful to have him with us this year, and I think the kids absolutely love the kind of just energy and positivity that he brought to the table every day.
Now, Coach, going from the actual coaches and yourself to the players, going back there again, mostly freshmen, just looking at some of your stats, Tristan Copeland led the team this year with 28 points. Nick Wendell had the first ever goal in team history with 20. He had 20 points on the year, and then defensively, Isaac and Brandon Ruditz, apologize if I got their names wrong, 9 cost turnovers. And then probably if I had an MVP, it might be the goaltender, Caleb Espinoza, who was a stud in goal. He started all 14 games. Any notable surprises individually by some of the players this season that you thought that stood out?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think they were all surprising. They all had moments, and they all had opportunities, and they all, whether it was in practice every day helping our starters get better or our starters on the field having breakout moments, you know, sporadically throughout the season, they all had flashes of why they belong at the Division I level, and I couldn't be, you know, more proud of each and every one of them. You know, certainly Tristan, you know, he transitioned down to attack. He's got a bright future, and whether it's at midfield or attack, it doesn't really matter because he's a versatile player, and he's got a really strong kind of IQ for the game. Nick Wendell, probably more so than any kid on the team, came in Division I ready and with a Division I kind of work ethic, and he's just got a want-to-be-great mentality. He's put together. I mean, he can really shoot the ball. Really had a good season, and I think that he's poised for a great career here. On the defensive end, you know, I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head with Ruditz and Isaac. I think they're just kind of two grinders that just kind of get the job done, whereas, you know, a guy like Zach Whitenack brings a little bit more flash to his game and can really get up and down the field. And we had to play Zach out of position this year at close defense, but he's truly an impact player between the lines, and I think can be a really special long stick midfielder at the Division I level, you know, the next 3 years. And then the two guys that kind of had the most success this year and I think warrant the most praise are Caleb in the goal. Just a natural stopper and just a very, very coachable young man. So he continued to improve from beginning to end and really earn the respect of the team. And then Danny Tesler, our kind of do-everything midfielder, faces off for us but also plays, you know, between the lines and is very capable offensively. Those two guys just kind of were the heart and soul of the team this year. We had lost Danny for a few games due to injury, and it certainly it hurt us. It really did. And once we got him back, he was the spark and just kind of developed into, you know, I would say the most vocal leader on the team, while Caleb was a little bit more lead by example. But those two guys just came in and against some really stiff competition performed at a high level. So, you know, really proud of both of them and expect big things from all of those guys that were mentioned, you know, moving forward.
Coach, when there are so many new successful upstart programs right now, I mean, Monmouth playing right now, the tournament, Marquette's been very good, BU. When you have so many programs like that finding success with young programs, how do you convince players out of high school to come to Cleveland State specifically?
Yeah, I think it's even easier now because, you know, a few years ago, and it wasn't that long ago, you could count on one hand who's going to win the national championship or who legitimately had a chance at it. And I think that while that might still be true, we're working closer and closer every year to having parity. And certainly the success of the newer programs opens the eyes of really every kid, whether they're from Ohio or a non-traditional area or they're from Baltimore or Long Island. It doesn't matter anymore because, you know, if you can play, you can play. And really it's more about finding the right fit for you, right system, right coaching staff, you know, certainly the right academic, you know, spot for yourself. So, you know, Cleveland State has a lot of great attributes to sell. Certainly the city and its kind of ascension in terms of, you know, where it is as a city in the United States and its kind of profile has helped quite a bit. And, you know, anytime you have LeBron James in your city, you're going to have more people looking at it, which is good. And we'll take it. You know, quite frankly, the Indians going to the World Series, the Cavs winning the championship, the RNC, like it all kind of was the perfect storm for us to kind of shine the light on the city of Cleveland. And then as a result, you know, shine the light on Cleveland State because we are part of the city of Cleveland. You know, we're located downtown. And, you know, almost every academic we have is integrated into the city in some way. So really a cool and unique setting from a collegiate standpoint. And, you know, the other aspect of it that just quite frankly makes us different is that we're just more affordable in a lot of ways as a state institution in Ohio. Unlike some of the other startups here that were private, you know, for a lot of families that you know, want their kid to play Division I, this makes more financial sense. So, you know, when you have 200 different degree programs, you've got an urban campus, a city environment, and you've got an affordable education and the ability to play a top 10 strength of schedule, you know, kids would be foolish not to take a look.
At the beginning of the season, when we first had our preseason chat, you talked about how having a tough schedule like this to help, you know, test your young guys and everything. And you alluded to it a little bit earlier that you're going to have the same game plan. So are we going to be expecting the same type of schedule next year, kind of like this year to, you know, a high strength of schedule to get these guys more acclimated? Or is it going to be toned down a little bit just because of that first year experience is off? Or is it going to be stick to the same game plan?
We're gonna stick to the same game plan. So just as it stands right now, we have 5 current NCAA tournament teams on the schedule next year. We actually do not. We no longer have any Division II or III opponents on the schedule. So it's just a complete Division I slate. So you know we're gonna continue to ratchet it up, and as hard as that sounds at this point, but it's what it's all about. You know, it's for us. We could kind of slow play this thing and really talk about getting better and how it's going to happen over time, or we can kind of just put this thing right into the pressure cooker. And I really believe in that kind of outlook. So we're going to continue to play the top teams and the teams that will schedule us. And I think our guys enjoy it. I talked about that earlier. They love it. And I think it accelerates the growth of our program. So we're just going to continue to schedule this way. And you know, at some point, we're going to chip away and find ourselves in a really, really close game in the fourth quarter with one of these top 25 teams, and I can't wait for that moment to happen, win or lose, just because, again, it's validation for the kids' hard work, but two, it just allows us to gain confidence and continue moving forward.
Coach, I was just wondering, now that we heard a little bit about St. Bonaventure, if you were to, if the AD from St. Bonaventure gave you a call, could you just let us describe some of the things that you would, suggest to the coach, and maybe share with us something that surprised you the most from this season? That and you're obviously well prepared and have a great resume, but I'm sure like once the season actually started, there had to have been something that caught you by surprise, and maybe you could just describe how you handled it and stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah, I think if I'm the AD or if I'm speaking with the AD at St. Bonaventure, I would tell him first and foremost, manage expectations, but maintain a high standard. Whoever takes that job is going to have a lot of hard work in front of them. And I'm sure that he understands that, nobody's coming into this thing really expecting, national championship in the first couple of years, but still maintain a high standard, don't lower those standards. I would say from a standpoint of, what I learned this year is that if you're going to go young, and I wouldn't trade what we've done and how we've built it for the world, just understand that there's a physical toll that's maybe you can't plan for, because these kids are so young and they're playing against, grown men, that there's a physical toll that you need to be prepared for, and just keep in the back of your mind. And certainly we have phenomenal athletic training staff, and that's helped, but just keep that in mind in scheduling. I would advise them to kind of really right from the jump figure out who they want to be from a competitive standpoint, who they want their peers to be, and then do the research and find out what the model is that those folks use, and try to align their model with who they want their peers to be, so that way that everybody's kind of on the same page in terms of what the expectations are and what the goals are for the program. And then lastly, I would just tell, whoever they hire as the head coach, to have as much fun as possible with it, to really enjoy each and every day. They go way faster than, you'll ever anticipate. And, if you can, and if you have the wherewithal, try to write it all down, because there's so many funny, cool, unique, horrible, interesting memories that I'm going to end up forgetting, and I probably already have forgotten, that I wish I had written down, because it's just such a cool journey. And you can talk to me, or you can talk to Coach Fisher over at Monmouth, or Coach Amplo at Marquette, and you can get our stories and what we did, but you're the only one that's ever going to walk in those shoes. So St. Bonaventure's is a unique place, and you're going to have to learn how to operate and navigate, its positives and negatives and its challenges and its benefits. And
just enjoy all of it because it goes so fast. And before you know it, you'll be, you know, coaching second year players or third year players.
Oh, sorry, Chris, just before I jump in, I just wanted to put a tail end on my last question, Coach. Just the response from the community and the school. Like, I know selling out the first game, you know, was a great sign. I just wanted to just get your thoughts on, like, how receptive the school was to the Vikings and, you know, to the players and everything.
Sure. No, it was actually pretty cool. We sold out our first four games, so I'm super thrilled about it. And honestly, I want to be more involved with community engagement. And I think this year was just a struggle because we had so much work to do, one. But two, we also didn't know what operations would look like. We didn't know what we were kind of quote-unquote selling. Now we have a good idea, and I think that next year you'll see us be even more engaged with the community and have even you know, greater turnout. The university as a whole, I think, was excited by what they saw. You know, certainly the ability to play against some of the big name programs is attractive to not only the university but the community. But also, I thought our guys did a real good job of being ambassadors for our program. And you know, they're shy. They're still, you know, quiet 18-year-old guys, freshmen. But I think as they become a little older, they'll be a little bit more willing to kind of get people in the university pumped up and just be more outgoing from that standpoint. But overall, couldn't be more thrilled with, you know, the community's engagement and the university. I just think it's just going to continue to grow and momentum will continue to build as we grow as a program and get to know the surroundings a little bit better.
Coach, a couple of questions. I know one Ryan discussed with you about the schedule. Any update on a conference search? And then number two is, since Safe just talked about the St. Bonaventure job, what's the difference between a job like that and a kind of already established job like Michigan, which is now currently searching for a new head coach?
Right. So, I mean, I think, first of all, just to address the conference piece, we are definitely starting to, in my opinion, I think we're starting to really put our foot on the gas there. And be a little bit more aggressive, which is much needed at this point. I mean, we need to be aggressive. You know, Mike Thomas, we got a new athletic director, Mike Thomas, and he's taken a more active and engaged role in terms of helping us find a home. And I'm hoping that, you know, by the 2019 season, we'll be in a home permanently, or at least, you know, temporarily, so that we have the ability to compete for championships and gain access to the NCAA tournament. One, because it's what this is all about, but two, I think our kids deserve it. But we're working hard on it, and if, you know, as soon as there's news, I will certainly, you know, let everybody know. You know, on to your next question, the difference really between a St. Bonnie's job and a job like Michigan or even a job like Delaware is pretty significant. You know, I just think that you're talking about a job like Delaware, where a program that's been to the Final Four, or a job like Michigan, a program that has aspirations to achieve at that level. And then you're talking about a job like St. Bonaventure, which, you know, and this is no disrespect, but, you know, in their press release, they made it very clear that their goals, you know, were not only to compete, but really to drive enrollment. And we're talking about two different animals there. So, you know, I think the Michigan and Delaware jobs are obviously going to be very attractive for a lot of coaches out there, because I think you can compete or have the potential to compete at a championship level at those places. It's a totally different setup at St. Bonnie's. You know, what a coach does in terms of decision-making to go there, it's really to try to build something special. And it's less about reaching the tournament, reaching Final Fours, competing for championships, and really trying to build, you know, a family environment, a competitive program, and build something that's more, you know, lasting. So different animals, different goals, different objectives. And I think that, you know, coaches at different places in their career will look at jobs like that differently. Not to say one is better than the other. They're just, you know, where you're finding fulfillment, what you're trying to accomplish, just things.
Marissa, did you have another question to ask?
Yeah, I guess my question is kind of a follow-up from my last question. It's about recruiting, because I'm so fascinated by the way programs are built like this. You have so many players on the team from so many different locations. How do you at the program, especially the new program that might not have the manpower as some other teams, how do you go out and find players from places like North Carolina and Vegas and Georgia and all these places? How do you distribute scouts and everything to go and see all of these players?
Right. So, unfortunately, in our sport, there's not much distribution of scouts. It's pretty much just me getting on the road and living out of a suitcase. But you know, I'm very very passionate about the recruiting aspect of the game. It's been something that I've really enjoyed doing, and I had success with at Denver, and you know, try to use that model here at CSU in terms of finding kids from all over the country and bringing them together. And I thought it was especially significant here because I really just wanted to make sure we didn't have a team within the team, you know, and if you have too many guys from one area, it can trend that direction. And given the adversity that I knew we would face, I wanted to make sure that everybody was kind of independent of each other so that they would have to come together as one unit, one cohesive group. And it's worked out just beautifully in that way. So, you know, it just means getting out and really going to see as many kids as you possibly can. And that summer before, you know, we came on at CSU full time, that's really what I did. And you know, moving forward, it's another interesting dynamic. It's almost like a puzzle, right? So we have found a lot of the pieces, like the majority of the puzzle now, and we don't graduate many guys for a number of years. So how do I go out and find, you know, those finishing pieces and put this puzzle together? It's super exciting, and I think that, you know, the incoming group that we have kind of on its way here this fall is outstanding. You know, we had a little bit more time to do our homework and get to know these guys, and I think that the fit at CSU is going to be really good for them. And they're going to complement the core group that we have returning this year in a way that I think is going to become really the foundation for this program for a long, long time. So very excited about the incoming group. And then, you know, the following group we can't really technically talk about, but it's a good group. It's smaller, obviously, because we just don't need the numbers and we're not graduating many. But it's a really complementary group to the kids that we have, and I think it's going to end up creating a great-looking roster for us in year three.
Just to wrap up the Cleveland State-centric talk, now that we're past year one, I know you, with recruiting's part of this, but what's going to be the biggest challenges for you and the program now that you're heading into year two? You've got that foundation set in stone after the hard work of year one. So now going forward, what's going to be the next mountain to climb for the Vikings?
I think, you know, taking that next step, and that's where I think you'll see it. You see, you know, programs all over, doesn't matter, established or new. Taking that next step is challenging because it's so difficult to win at this level, and all the coaches do such a great job, and there's more talented players now than ever. And so for us, it's really making sure that our guys continue to have the same level of buy-in that they had this year, and for us to get better. You know, it's just really, you know, individual guys focusing on bringing more to the table in terms of off-season preparation, getting stronger, getting faster, and then during the year, taking advantage of guys like Kyle Bernlohr and Andy German and really, you know, expanding their knowledge of the game and improving their skills and really just, you know, fine-tuning their craft so that when we hit the season in January, we hit the ground running and everybody's in the best shape. Everybody's as knowledgeable as they can be about our systems. And that way we can just focus on coming together as a group and then focus on our first opponent, which is Bellarmine in 2018. So I think we're on our way, and I certainly think this group is hungrier than ever, and I credit that, you know, A, to their makeup and who they are, but B, I also think that the win at the end of the season did a lot for us in terms of, you know, re-sparking that, you know, passion for what we're doing. So couldn't have asked for a better time to get our first win, and couldn't ask for a better group of kids to kind of move on and create this next step team two kind of environment.
Well, like Coach, I love you dropping that breaking news about Bellarmine being your first game next year. So thanks, greatly appreciate that.
Yeah, we got some good ones lined up. I can tell you.
I can't wait. No, it's going to be awesome. I think we pretty much can all kind of agree. Besides the games itself, thing that always talked about the most is recruiting and early recruiting. The recent NCAA decision to curtail early recruiting. I was just wondering if I could get some of your thoughts, maybe I don't want to put you on pressure if you're you don't have to give too much away, but you know, if you could share some things that maybe you feel like potential unintended consequences and potentially good things that could come from this new legislation.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking, and I know everybody has you know, different viewpoints on what's right, what's wrong. You know, I'm a big believer of free market in terms of recruiting, so I'm not a huge supporter of the legislation. I do agree that there are some very negative, you know, there's some very negative impacts as a result of early recruiting in terms of, you know, inter-team dynamics and a young man's or a young woman's development and how they respect their coaches. I get all of it, and I get the argument against early recruiting, and I understand that I would be completely in favor of getting rid of it. I just don't think that the legislation as it passed is going to help do much, quite frankly. I think it takes what was a very open situation and now potentially makes it a little murkier, maybe a little bit more hidden. And I'm not sure that that's real healthy for anybody, quite frankly. The other thing I think it may do is really put more of a premium on third-party contacts, and I certainly don't think that's healthy. I mean, really, the coach's ability to communicate with the prospect is so important, and to take that away, I think, is a risky proposition, and I'm certainly not in favor of it, but I understand what they were trying to do, and I think it was well-intentioned. I'm just not sure that the way it's been executed is really the right way. I think it was a little rushed and maybe just based out of the perception that we wanted to not have early recruiting be a thing in our sport, but to kind of rush into this kind of legislation, I'm not sure was appropriate.
Coach, going back to previewing kind of next season and going back to the first, you know, we talked about the first game and the first senior day for against Sacred Heart and kind of like the first fall ball for last year, but now this year it'll be the first fall ball, but with brand new teammates for many of these guys from a lower class and maybe even some competition, maybe some spots might be up. How are you going to try to and teach these guys, these freshmen, about competition in Division I and this next step into year two?
Well, the beautiful thing about having a team here already and having a group of guys that has that year under their belt is it's not just me, Andy, Kyle, and Gary teaching them about competition. Now it's the returning group teaching them, setting a bar, policing internally, and really those guys have bought in so well and take so much pride in what we've built together that they're going to be the ones that show our newcomers how it's done, the right way to do things, and hold them accountable. And the exciting part is that I think the new guys are equally excited, and they're going to, you know, put it right back on the returners' plates in terms of, well, you know, you're going to demand this of us. Well, we're going to push you guys to a new level too. So I just, you know, I'm probably more excited than I've ever been in terms of getting these guys here and getting us going in the fall. I know it's going to be extremely productive. And, you know, it allows us from a coaching standpoint schematically to do some more things that we are excited about and I know the guys will enjoy. So, you know, just a ton of excitement. And, again, can't credit the guys that were on the team this year enough in terms of the foundation that they've built and their buy-in. And I think that that's just going to, you know, pay dividends tenfold moving forward. And I know this new group coming in is a great group of young men, first and foremost, high character, very strong academically. And all those traits are indicative of the kind of guys that help you build and that understand what we're doing. And that's really what we look for in recruiting. So this group's going to come in right away. They're going to make their impression felt, and we're going to just grow together and, you know, hopefully have a really, really successful year in 2018.
So you just got back from the MCLA tournament. So given that you're done with coaching for the season, what's it like going back to watching it as a fan? Or, you know, you've called an MLL game over the weekend as well. So going into that analyst type mood. How do you make that transition back to either being an analyst or watching things for the fun of it?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, that year off without coaching, I was so worried about being disengaged and kind of losing some sharpness, I guess you could say. And now that I've just had a year being kind of in the pressure cooker, and now I'm watching whether it's MLL or MCLA, it doesn't really matter the level, even high school locally, which I try to do often. You look at it so much more critically in a good way. You're looking at it, you know, how can I learn from this situation so that if that situation ever happens in one of my games, I'll be prepared. And it's just really a lot of fun. And, you know, the MCLA tournament is really, really special. It's near and dear to my heart, and I'm glad that I was able to participate. And I think now, again, what I realize when I watch games like that, and I probably didn't think of it as much as an assistant and think of it way more now as a head coach, is, you know, when you're in a tournament environment or a playoff environment, as happy and elated as you are to get a win, I feel probably more now for those squads that lose and you know, those young men whose careers have ended. And I think about that stuff more and more now. And I know my guys have a long way to go before they have to face that reality. But, I look at Kyle Bernlohr, for example, and he talks to the guys all the time about the kind of expiration date on your career. And I just want to continue to reemphasize that with my guys, because when I watch kids and their careers end, it's so sad and it's heartbreaking, because it's such a great thing that we get to participate in the sport. And the MCLA tournament was really enjoyable. You know, the MLL games are a lot of fun. But there's nothing like NCAA Division I lacrosse. It's the best lacrosse in the world. It's the highest level, and it's the most committed players and the best coaches. And it's just a ton of fun, and I'm so grateful to be able to have a small role in it every spring.
Where are the analysts? Sorry, did I interrupt somebody?
No, Marissa, you're fine.
Okay. I just want to stick with NCAA Division I with the postseason tournament beginning today with the play-in game. What's your take on the seedings and going into the tournament overall?
Yeah, you know, every single year people are going to be dissatisfied and they're going to have complaints, and that's the nature of a 16-team tournament. You know, I don't care if it's 64 teams, right, NCAA basketball, there's always going to be a great team, a deserving team that's left out, or a team that maybe is questionable that gets in. That's just the way it goes. I mean, I sat there in black and orange 2 years ago and was the first or the last team out, and it sucked. But that's how it is, right? You got to win your games. You got to win the ones that you're supposed to win, and you got to win maybe even a couple that you're not supposed to win, because once you get to the tournament, it's the best teams. And really, if you're going to complain about who you got, how you got seeded, or who you're playing, then you're already in a negative mindset, in a mindset that's going to put you at a disadvantage in terms of getting yourself to a Final Four or winning a championship. So I think the best teams, best coaches, don't even lose a second of sleep over how they were seeded or who they have to play. They just focus on the task at hand. And, for the teams that are left out, I think there's a valid argument that we could, as lacrosse fans, make to expand the tournament. But I think, you know, if you're not a fan of lacrosse, or you're an outsider looking in, you know, proportionality, we already have more teams in than some other sports. So it is what it is. I think it's very exciting. I think some of the matchups are incredibly intriguing. As a fan, I can't wait to sit down in front of the TV or even get to some of these games and see how it unfolds, because I don't think there's ever been a time like this in our sport where there are so many teams that have a legitimate shot of winning a championship and getting hot and making a run like North Carolina did last year. And it's just super exciting. So as a fan of the sport, this is the greatest time of the year. And I'm thrilled and excited to watch. And hopefully, in a couple years, we'll be participating.
This year with the NCAA, one of the controversies, if you will, was taking away one of the at-large bids to compensate with the ACC's AQ loss. Do you think that the tournament should expand back to 18 next season, or do you think it's fine where it is at 17?
I mean, I'm always going to be a proponent of expansion. If there's ever an opportunity to get one more team, let's get one more team, you know? So, yeah, I mean, absolutely, let's get that 18th team back. But, you know, I think realistically we have to manage our expectations there. Again, we all love it. We all are fascinated by lacrosse, and we're in the thick of it, and we talk about it every day. But, you know, administrators and people on the outside, they're not as invested. And so, you know, they're going to have some valid arguments against, you know, some of our hopes and dreams, and we just have to kind of keep working toward convincing these people and these positions that lacrosse is on the uptick and that we're going to be worth it. And I think that, you know, the players involved, the coaches involved, and certainly you know, our media and everybody really surrounding the sport is doing a great job selling folks that don't know a lot about lacrosse about how great this is and how exciting the game is. And I think we just got to continue in this direction, and we're going to be really, you know, we're going to be really proud of where this thing goes in the coming years.
Coach, one of the also more recent news development was the fact that the Final Four is going to come back to Philly. We love hearing that. But that they're also moving towards Fairfield, Connecticut, I believe in 2021, 2022.
UConn hosted by Fairfield.
Exactly. Do you have an opinion on the whole larger stadiums versus back to college, or do you feel like it's fine as it is, or would you want to like make some changes with the Final Four? Maybe have the championship game a week or several days after, because we all know that there's the kind of this trend where the team who plays second on the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend tends to lose on that Monday. I don't know if you think it would be better for the sport to spread them out, and just maybe just some of your thoughts on the Final Four in general.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a lot of really interesting arguments to be made, whether it's push it back off of Memorial Day weekend. You know, I think the big thing for us is that we have to make these tickets affordable for families. I mean, it's not easy for families to come to a city, bring you know wife, kids, purchase tickets, get hotel rooms, obviously, you know, eat out at restaurants, and we have to keep that stuff in mind if we want to try to fill these stadiums up. Now, that being said, if we can find ways to make these tickets a little bit more inexpensive, I would love to see it continue in the NFL venues. Just from my own personal experience, you know, I really enjoyed coaching, and I think our kids really enjoyed playing in those NFL venues in the quarterfinals and the Final Fours, and it's just really special. You know, you get the police escort, you get the whole nine yards, and it makes the whole playoff atmosphere extremely special. And I wouldn't want to see that go away, but if it meant getting more families and people at the games, I would be willing to make some compromises. That's the big thing, right? We just need to make sure that people come and see it live, because there's nothing like it, and it's so fun, and the atmosphere is so fan-friendly, more so than any other big-time sport. I think you have the ability to engage with players and interact with coaches. And that's why lacrosse is so special, because the players and coaches are excited, just as excited to interact with the fans as the fans are with them. So if it means going to a smaller stadium, then so be it. But let's just find ways to get more families and as many people as we can to these big games, because it's so important, I think, for the experience, but also for the perception of the sport moving forward to see these games in sold out venues and not turn on the TV on Memorial Day weekend and see, you know, 20,000 empty seats. So yeah, probably something has to give. My first recommendation would be just see if we can find ways to make the tickets more inexpensive, but I'm not sure what the answer is. It's just not, you know, where my expertise lies.
I kind of agree with you. I think the ticket prices is probably one of the biggest culprits for the decline, but thanks for your comments.
And then with going back to the quarterfinals and maybe even the championship weekend, the furthest west that we've seen for like the future sites is Notre Dame Stadium in Indiana. We've had it 2 years ago at Denver at Mile High Stadium, and you guys at Denver played in that stadium, which was kind of cool, as you said before. Do you think there should be more quarterfinal games held west of the Mississippi, like we're seeing with Notre Dame, and maybe going back to Denver, maybe in Colorado again, maybe even some neutral sites?
Yeah, it's interesting. That's a really interesting point. I haven't really thought of it. I almost think that the quarterfinals ought to be in the kind of hotbed areas just because there's so many teams relative to the Final Four. I mean, you can have a lot of bang for your buck there. And so maybe they should stay kind of closer to the East Coast in those kind of traditional areas. Maybe the Final Four should be something that we consider moving. I'm not sure what the answer is, to be honest with you. I just I know there's a lot of people west of the Mississippi playing lacrosse and passionate about the game. And I think the more opportunities we give them to see it, whether it be regular season games or playoff games, I think the sport will be pleasantly surprised by the level of support it gets from those non-traditional areas. So, yeah, maybe quarterfinals, maybe Final Four, maybe just regular season games. But the more we can do to get the game out there, I think we will see return on that investment big time. So, yeah, I don't necessarily have the answer, but I like the idea.
Did you want to go, or Ryan?
Yeah, it's just back to Major League Lacrosse for a second, just commentating with MLL. I work with MLL a lot, so I just was interested in that right away. What's your take on the differences between the style of play in MLL and a college game? Because I was at the Bayhawks Cannons game on Saturday night, and it was a 19-18 final score, and I was struck by it. I forgot how much faster paced it is, the shot clock and everything, the two-point shot. It just feels like a different game. So just what's your take on really the differences between the two levels, and if there should be less of a difference or something like that, just because there are D1 players going to the pro level, and it just feels like the speed of the game is completely different.
Yeah, I think I personally I like a lot of the aspects of the MLL. I think it's one of those sports and seasons that the players get better, the teams get better as the season goes on because they get developed chemistry and the sticks get sharper. And I really think that the level of play in the MLL by the end of the summer is probably as high or higher than any lacrosse in the world. But I do think it's challenging this time of year to try to have a professional league compete with the NCAA – high school, obviously the elephant in the room is the NLL. I'm not sure that we gain anything by having another avenue for lacrosse during this time of year. Maybe the answer is to bump the MLL back a little bit and have them going in the later portion of the summer and into the fall. And then we have, you know, a period of the year that's currently being, you know, not being utilized, being utilized by the best players in the world, and maybe the attention will be more, you know, exclusively focused on them. That's just an idea. Overall, I like the way the MLL is played. I think it's a players league, and the NCAA is far from that. You know, that's, you know, very micromanaged, and certainly the coaches have a ton of input. So I think the players really enjoy playing in the MLL, and it's a kind of a breath of fresh air after, you know, the rigorous nature of Division I in most cases. Does it have its flaws? Absolutely. But I like the game. I think it's awesome. I think just by the nature of how small the league is and how few the roster opportunities there are, it's incredibly competitive. And I know that the guys that play really enjoy it. So it's cool. Would I say that, you know, it's better than NCAA from a rules or style of play perspective? I would argue no. It's not, you know, not for me personally, but I'm sure that some people, and maybe the casual fan likes it better, you know. So it's all out there for everybody to kind of evaluate and decide on for themselves.
I think, Coach, we're just going to have like one last round of questions. So you've been so gracious with your time, but we obviously love you. You're awesome, but I got to put you on the spot. Do you have a Final Four you want to share with us, and maybe even a championship title? Who do you think is going to win the championship?
Yeah, that's tough. I certainly don't want to burn any bridges or make anybody feel uncomfortable out there. I think that, you know,
look, Coach Tillman at Maryland and what those guys have done and the level of experience that those guys have on that roster, I would say that overall for me they'd be the favorite. I just, there's no substitute for experience, and you'll have teams occasionally break through, but more often than not, those guys, they know what to expect, and that's really big going into these settings. They're also very, very good defensively, and right at the end of the day, I think defense plays a huge role in the ability to win a championship. They're great at the face-off X, and certainly they have the offensive firepower to get it done. I also think that their strength of schedule throughout the season has prepared them to be successful, you know, going down the stretch here. So I would say that Maryland is the favorite from my standpoint for all those reasons. I think there's some interesting teams out there, no question. I think that, you know, of course I'm a little biased, but I certainly, would love to see Denver make a run. And I think that anytime you have a guy like Trevor Baptiste, and his kind of ability to potentially take over a game will put them in the conversation, no question. And obviously they're very good in all the other areas and very well coached and all that stuff. But I think Baptiste can be an X factor. And if he, you know, plays well for four games, all of a sudden Denver's raising the trophy. I mean, he's that good. I think, those two teams for sure. Obviously Carolina getting hot in the ACC tournament probably has everybody in the country kind of like unbuttoning their top button, being like, oh God, not this again. Those guys are, and look, those guys have great, they have experience. They've got some really talented players and they've got to be, they're going to be a handful. They're going to be a tough out. And you look at Duke and how Coach Dienowski just continues to do what he does and his teams just continue to get better, you know, mature, develop, become more competitive and then ultimately dominant at the end of the season every year is something that I think every coach aspires toward. And he's just done an incredible job with those guys. And I think Duke is starting to hit on all cylinders. There's a bunch of kind of dark horse teams as well. I think that, you know, looking back on it and looking at the season and looking at their body of work, for me, Maryland is the favorite. But we had the chance to play Ohio State and Penn State, and those teams have a ton of talent and are extremely well coached also. So there's teams that we didn't get to play that are very talented. You know, certainly you look at Loyola, you look at Yale, you look at some of these squads, Air Force. And Bryant got the big win tonight. But I think that experience plays a huge role in this. And so for me, I look at the Terps and I look at the Pioneers as two potential favorites.
And then going after the tournament, we have it's a rules summer for the NCAA. Just curious over if there's one or a few rules maybe you would like to see happen or something change for the upcoming lacrosse season in your mind.
Yeah, I'm sure that when you ask this question, most people talk about the shot clock. I'm going to dodge that whole topic. I actually like the way the game is right now. I feel like, and maybe it's the football background, but if you want to run the spread offense, run the spread offense. If you want to run it between the tackles, run it between the tackles. But a shot clock, I think, kind of forces everybody to play one way, and I'm not a fan of that. So I'm not going to look for that change, or I hope that that change doesn't come. The two things that I would change, one, I would bring back the dive. I think that's a very difficult call for officials, and it's very gray. And quite frankly, I haven't been shown any evidence that it's all that dangerous. So I would bring back the dive. I think it's an exciting aspect of the game, almost like, you know, if you told the NBA, we love what you guys do, you're really talented athletes, but we don't want you guys to dunk anymore. You could hurt your fingers, you know. It's like, all right, we want the dive. It's exciting. Fans love it. Players love it. Let's bring that back. Let's take it out of the ref's hands. And then the other area that kind of like a just like a little rule that I've always kind of thought would be kind of cool is that on face-off violations, you know, years ago, the face-off guy would have to run off, and it would give the team that was violated against a momentary 6-on-5 until that guy got off and then somebody got on. I love that. At Denver, we had some cool set plays that we ran during those situations, and I thought that was really neat. The only tweak I would make to that rule, I would bring that rule back, and the tweak would be that the face-off guy has to stay on. So now he has to actually get involved in the 6-on-5 defense and be a lacrosse player. And the wingman furthest from the substitution box, and it could be the pole, it could be the short stick, that'd be up for the coaches to figure out, has to run off. So that the momentary 6-on-5, that numerical advantage would be longer, and the face-off specialist would have to be in that defensive stop or defensive play. So I think that would be interesting. I think it'd be intriguing. Maybe you'd see less face-off specialists and more guys that are capable of getting back and actually playing defense. It'd be a really interesting experimental rule. So those are the two things I would do. I would tweak that face-off violation, and I would bring back the dive.
Marissa, did you have one last question as well?
Yeah, I keep putting my microphone on mute and then talking. Coach, since you have traveled around for the recruiting process and everything like that and really seen a lot of what the country has to offer as far as lacrosse, where do you think are the next big markets where we could continue to see some expansion?
Well, you know, I can't give away the secrets here. Philadelphia, in my opinion, is the spot that produces the most high-end talent. You look at the best guys in the country, high school, and how they transition, not just playing, but how they transition and impact the Division I ranks, it's the Philly kids. There's a lot of competition in that market. You know, there just is. So am I going to have a ton of success there? I could, but probably not going to pull the top end guys, but I think even some of the second tier guys in the Philadelphia market are Division I ready. But there's a lot of pockets that are just exploding with lacrosse that are going to yield great players. And so much of it, I think, that's been lost with early recruiting is player development. And a kid can come out of high school and be the next big thing, but player development is so important. And also opportunities to play early in your career and maybe fail, but learn from those opportunities. Lastly, I think it's just making sure that you find the right fit as a player from a stylistic standpoint and really beyond the style of play of values and what you're looking to get out of the experience, because the lacrosse piece is fleeting, and what you're going to have after 4 years is hopefully a fulfilling experience, lifelong friendships, and you'll never really care what the score was of a game your sophomore year. You'll just care that you worked as hard as you could, and that your buddies are there for you when you're having a bachelor party and getting married, or you have your first kid and all that good stuff. So there's going to be great players everywhere, more and more. I mean, you saw a kid from Ohio State this weekend have an impact, a huge impact. From Alabama, you see kids from California. Like, it's second nature now. We don't even think about that as a non-traditional area. And so it's just awesome to see. And my program here in Cleveland is going to thrive off of kids from all over the country, because, that's just what we believe in. We think that makes for a better locker room environment and a more fulfilling experience, a more enriching experience overall.
All right, to wrap it up, we're going to put you on the spot here, because if there's one thing we like to do here on College Crosscast is put people on the spot. What's your Final Four this year? I know that you're coaching your own program, but with Cleveland State out, you could be a little bit of an unbiased guy here. So Final Four and national champion pick, if you will.
I think he already kind of answered that, right?
Well, he said his favorites, but who do you see lifting the trophy when all is said and done?
Right. So I would say, look, I'm not going to pretend. I'm not a homer. I got Denver winning it. Again, as I mentioned, I think it'll be the Terps and Denver in the final. And I think we'll see.
Please be Hopkins.
You say please be Hopkins?
Yeah, of course.
I think we're going to see some new blood. I think the Buckeyes might break in there this year. And then I think you're going to see Duke or Carolina on the other spot. So some blue bloods, some new blood. And ultimately, I got the trophy going back to the Rocky Mountains.
Right on.
All righty. Well, we thank Coach Dylan Sheridan of Cleveland State once again for joining us. Always a blast to have you on.
Coach, I can't. We can't thank you enough. What you said about the season going so fast, it felt like just 2 weeks ago that we had you on for the preseason. So, yeah, thanks again.
Yeah, Coach, it was great to have you on at the beginning of the year and then just to see this program evolve through the season and then just have you on as like a little wrap-up for a really special first year for you and as well as your players. Just it was great to have you on for both of these times and best of luck going forward with this program. And have a fun summer.
And, Coach, yeah, thank you. A lot of incredible insight. Really, really appreciate all of it.
Thanks to all of you guys. I really, just value, appreciate, and enjoy, quite frankly, the work that you guys do. So thanks for everything and kind of the light that you guys shine on the game. And I love that the fun that you have with it, too. We got to remember to have some fun with this thing. I already miss lacrosse. It's crazy. So I'm looking forward to next year. And, thank you guys for everything. And look forward to talking to you more about Cleveland State lacrosse in the future.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, go Vikings.
Awesome. Take care, guys. Have a great night.
You too.
You too.
All right. We thank Coach Dylan Sheridan for joining us once again. On our end, as usual, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at RyanMcD29.
I'm at Marissa_Njemi.
I'm at CF Jastrzemski.
And I'm at Erie_Barrister.
Of course, the primary account at SexyTimeWax. You could also follow us on Facebook, where we did cool things like the Facebook Live episode last week. And you can also follow us on Instagram at college_cross. I've been doing some brackets for the social for the Instagram account.
It's good to have Art Ryan back. I just want to say, on behalf of the lacrosse community.
Glad to hear. Thanks, guys. One update. Bryant beat Monmouth in the play-in game, so Bryant will face off against Maryland this weekend. The final score in that one out of Smithfield, Rhode Island, 10-7, the Bulldogs won. So, Bryant, once again, victors in a play-in game. They seem to do really well in the play-in games. They now get rewarded with the number one Maryland Terrapins. College Cross is your one-stop hub for everything during the NCAA tournament. Log on for a lot of great analysis, articles, and be sure to engage in the comments section as well.
Indeed. Couple of things from my end. I will be at not only the Syracuse game Sunday because I'm a manager there, but I'll be also at the UNC-Albany game Saturday night. Indeed. And then for Cleveland State, since we joined, thank you for Dale and for joining us. You can follow them on Twitter at CSU Viking Slacks, and you can follow Dylan himself at DSheridan8.
Alrighty, so from all of
us. Wait, Marissa.
Yes.
What Final Four?
Yes.
Oh, no, are you putting me on the spot?
Yes, that's what we do on College Cross.
Okay, let me actually have a bracket up here so that I don't get it wrong. Because I had promised myself I wasn't going to fill one out because I was studying for finals and that seemed like a way to procrastinate. So I can't pick BU to win it, unfortunately. So they win it in my heart forever.
By the way, the best part of the podcast The best part is I killed the outro music to get back into this combo because we needed to do versus picks because we love putting people on the spot.
You caught me off guard. I literally just pulled up all my finals homework and everything to look at, and now all of a sudden I'm back into lacrosse again. If I could get this bracket to actually load so I don't pick the wrong teams, that would be really helpful. Here we go. Okay, let's see. Who am I picking? Okay, so Maryland and Denver.
You gotta go each game. That's what we did.
Okay. Oh, game by game?
Yeah, it's nine games.
Good news, you don't have to pick Brian Monmouth.
So Maryland will beat Brian. I would have picked Monmouth anyway, so that's good.
Go by the rounds.
Maryland will beat Bryant. I gotcha. North Carolina will beat Albany, because North Carolina. Denver will beat Air Force. Notre Dame will beat Marquette.
Ow.
Then the other side, I want to pick Marquette really bad, but I'm not going to. Other side of the bracket, Loyola will beat Ohio State because Patriot League. Hopkins will beat Duke because Duke beat BU and I'm salty. Penn State will beat Towson, and then Syracuse will beat Yale. So then the
Thank
next
you.
Round.
I'm still the only one on the
Syracuse
podcast
is like
Yale.
One. Syracuse is low key one of the teams that I like.
Yes.
Like I don't talk about it, but I like Syracuse.
Everyone likes
Maryland
Syracuse.
Maryland will beat
for
North
Syracuse
Carolina,
fans.
And Denver will beat Notre Dame. at least
sorry,
you have
sorry
fans.
To interrupt. Sorry
you
to
have
interrupt.
Fans for your school, at least. Loyola will beat Hopkins. Do I mean that? Yeah, I mean that. And then Syracuse will beat Penn State, because I'm not going to buy in on Penn State until the end. So that means my final four officially is Maryland, Denver, Loyola, Syracuse. That sounds about right.
And then
yeah.
the championship game? You got to go the whole way. That's what
we said final four. I have Denver beating Loyola.
Chris's reaction! And on that bombshell...
Do you know how much I want to pick Loyola to win so that BU can win a transitive national championship because they defeated Loyola, but I'm not going to go that far.
BU's going to win a transitive national title anyway. Everyone's going to win a transitive national title, more or less.
Yeah.
Well, to quote Jeremy Clarkson and to repeat myself on that bombshell, that does it for this College Crosscast. We'll be back at it early next week with whoever wants to join on, whatever bunch of people want to break down the first round. So we'll do that early
whoever
next
you invite.
Week. Yeah, well, whoever safe feels.
I thought you'd rather be on there with Sheridan. I mean, that was, but whatever.
Alrighty, but on that note, enjoy the first round of the NCAA tournament. Stay hydrated, everybody.
Take care, Felicia. Everybody.